Welcome back to Elevate, where we are highlighting and inspiring issues that matter most to our communities. And today, I have a very special guest with us, Natalie Ellis. She is a trained mental health therapist, an incredible mom, and she'll be telling us her story and her journey as a mental health therapist. So, Natalie, yes. Thank you for joining.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, we got to talk a lot before we started recording live, but I don't want to spoil it for you guys. So I'm going to start with her bio, and then we're going to jump into some really important questions. Today's topic is mental health, so please stay with us. Mental health impacts all of us. You're going to learn some really important nuggets today. We want to make sure you get the information so that you're healthy and well. Natalie Ellis is a native of Port-au-Prince, Haiti, but currently living in Atlanta, Georgia. She's a graduate of Georgia School of Professional Psychology in the year 2000 with a master's in professional counseling. Today, she is the founder of Esteem Counseling and Consulting Services, LLC, and private agency where she provides mental health services to individuals, families, and couples, training to other mental health professionals to attain continuing education, and workshops to clients and members in the community surrounding mental health topics. She also provides clinical supervision to newly master level and licensed professionals. So you guys are looking for a clinical supervisor, you found one. And as a therapist, she serves children, teens, adults, couples, and families as young as three. And she just told me her oldest client is 76 years old, who struggle with depression, anxiety, self-esteem, emotional and behavioral problems, past traumatic events, relationship problems, etc. And one of the things I love the best, she's an author of two children's books, Where Is My Daddy? A Boy's, and A Girl's Guide to Grieving an Absent Parent. And one workbook, How to Stay Mentally Healthy, which is a guided workbook to self-awareness and self-discovery. The mission of Esteem, which is her agency, is to break the silence, shame, and stigma of mental health by empowering, enriching, educating, and motivating. Y'all, again, Natalie Ellis.
Thank you.
This is incredible. Incredible. There's a story behind this. And, you know, I read through your incredible bio, and I know it doesn't capture half of what you do. But I'd love to start off by you telling us what was it that catapulted you into this work?
Well, I think ever since I was a young child, people tend to gravitate towards me.
Yeah.
And in a way that they feel impelled to just kind of tell their story.
Yeah.
And so I'm often sitting somewhere and somebody just comes and sits and just starts talking. Right? That's always been the case since I was a little child. And so,
yeah.
And I find that really exciting and
sure.
Really in a space where if I could help someone, I thought that was helpful. If I could just be a listening ear. And so a lot of what I do as a mental health therapist is to first be that safe space and that space where people can just come and just sit and talk about whatever it is that's on their mind. So that's the first thing that I do is just listen. And so if I could do that for someone, you know, I'd love to do that.
Wow. So it's almost like you were called into this work.
I'd say so. I'd say so because I've known since I was probably 14, 15.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. And I feel like mental therapists, we're doctors in our own right, doctors of people's heart, emotions.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and we're doing really important life-saving work too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's so important. Our mental health is everything.
Absolutely.
And how we see ourselves and how we see the world around us, it's in everything that we do. And so if it's not stable, if it's not taken care of, then it throws everything off. And so it's important that we take care of our mental health. Yeah.
What is mental health for those that may not understand? I think we hear it. We're like, no, I don't want it. I don't know what that means. And we reject it. But if you can explain it to the everyday person listening, what is mental health?
Well, our mental health, and there's so many aspects of it. There's our mental health, there's our emotional health.
Yeah.
And it's when we are kind of in the way I like to describe it, it's how we see our health and how we see ourselves, right? And so when we experience life and when we experience other people, all of that is impacted and shapes a narrative of how we want to see the world and how we're going to see ourselves. And so all that is a part of our mental health and our physical health and our emotional health. And so mental health encompasses our emotional health as well, how we feel and our cognitive, how we see things, how we think about things. And so our mental health dictates a lot of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way you broke down the definition, because it really does encompass all those things.
Yeah,
the way we see the world. Sometimes, and I peeked into your book, the workbook, but you had like the common thinking traps.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Oftentimes people get stuck in, again, a narrative of how life should be for them based, again, on their experiences, right?
Sure.
And so, an example, I have clients who may have a situation where, again, since we'll talk about absent parent, where there's an absent parent, a parent who's not around.
Right.
And so based on those experiences with that particular parent, there's a mistrust that occurs, right?
Sure.
Feeling as if they can't trust the world. And so that child may then have a narrative of, I can't trust people.
Right.
I can't trust for people to show up for me. Mm-hmm. I can't trust for people to be there for me, right?
Right.
Because that parent, in whatever way, kind of showed that to them.
Sure.
And so when we get stuck in those traps, it's a trap that once we create that narrative, it feels as if we can't move away from that trap.
Mm.
Yeah. That thinking error, sometimes it becomes thinking error about safety. There's all kind of ways that thinking error could come into about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know that's one of the common thinking traps, but there's so many others that people don't even realize they have. Mm-hmm. And they're operating in the world and working, and they're like, it's your fault. They're blaming everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's people who see things all or nothing. There's people who tend to catastrophize things. Something happen, and they make it become something much bigger than what it is.
Right.
There's people who tend to overthink. So there's lots of ways that we fall into these thinking errors and traps. Absolutely.
One of the things I want to highlight is you talked about it being a lot of it rooted in relationship, especially in those very foundational years when you were supposed to be attaching to your parents. And it sounds like that's a lot of your work. You know, your book, Where Is My Daddy? Immediately when I seen the title, I shared this with you before we started recording, it pinged my heart. And I said, I don't know if it's because I didn't grow up with a dad or if it's because of all the kids we serve without a dad or if it's both. But I want to hear the story behind that title again. Share with us what inspired you.
So there's a boy version and a girl version of the book.
Yeah.
Where's My Daddy?
Wow.
And the book was inspired by my son. So I have a now 21-year-old son.
Wow.
And his father wasn't consistently around. And so I grew up with both my parents, and both my parents are still married to this day. So I haven't had that experience.
Wow.
And so with him and with my clients, I see where when there is a parent that's not involved and when that's not around, that how that impacts, again, their worldview, impacts how we see the world, how we think about ourselves.
Sure.
And the book is the conversation, to start the conversation about where is my daddy.
Yeah.
And so this is a story about a little boy.
Can I hold the other one up?
Yeah.
While you hold that one up.
It's a story about a little boy or a little girl, and they're going through their story. And in aspects, in different parts of the story, it starts to talk about the different stages of grief.
Right.
Right? Because what the title of this book, Where Is My Daddy? A Boy's Guide to Grieving an Absent Father. Because, again, parents need to realize, and people need to realize, not having a father around or not having a parent around is a loss. And because it's a loss, we have to grieve it.
Right.
Right? And there's stages of grief. There's denial.
Yeah.
Not wanting to acknowledge that it's happening. There's,
sure.
There's anger. Mm-hmm. There's bargaining. And with bargaining, there's a lot of guilt that, that happens. And then there's depression. And we get to a place of acceptance. And so in this book, it kind of goes through that story.
Yeah.
The child's story and the different times that they're going through the stages of grief.
Sure.
Right? And so this is just the beginning conversation. And so in the book, too, I have recommendations for parents. I have recommendations for the child, things the child can do, and just signs to pay attention to that shows that there is something going on. Because, again, oftentimes we we don't have that because it is a difficult conversation for moms or dads to have with the child in, regarding this other parent that isn't around, mm-hmm. right? And so, but it's important to have those conversations because either mm-hmm. way, the pain that the child may be going through,
right?
It's there regardless.
Yeah.
Right? It's there regardless whether we have the conversation or not. So mm-hmm. it's best to have the conversation so that they can become more self-aware and they could have tools and skills to handle whatever it is they need to handle.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is so incredible. And I'm so overwhelmed by your work.
Thank you.
Because it's so necessary. It's needed.
Thank you.
I'm thinking about a number of things. I'm thinking in my mind about some clients that I've had mm-hmm. who have had absent fathers. And, you know, a lot of their esteem issues, mm-hmm. a lot of their issues in fighting and rage and
relationships
was rooted mm-hmm. in not having their father there. Mm-hmm. And when we would have our breakthroughs, mm-hmm. about 99.9% of the time, it came from a daddy wound.
Yeah, it does.
You know,
interestingly enough, most of the clients that I serve, conversations will always go back to parenting, their parents, right? Whether the parent has been around and then there's conversation about that, whether or not that relationship was healthy or toxic, or whether the parent wasn't around, you know?
Right.
And so there's all kind of ways that can show there's neglect, there's emotional abuse, there's all kind of ways. And so with all my clients, as they're going through their healing journey, relationships with their parents, whether they're present or not present, is always going to play because that's the foundation, as you said, right?
Yeah.
Those foundational relationships shapes who we are. And
right.
So when they're there, great. And how they're there also impacts. If they're not there, something, and you know. And so those foundational parental stuff is key. It's important to work through.
Absolutely. And, you know, you talked about some of your clients mm-hmm. being much older.
Yes.
We talked about, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are.
It does not.
You can still work on your issues and you can still, there's still healing available.
Absolutely. I have clients, like I said, as old as 76 and as young as 3, right? Because, again, the traumas begin in the womb. And I often have to tell people that as women, we can experience lots of stuff within our relationships or just life, right?
Yeah.
And if we're carrying a baby, guess what? Guess who's taking on some of that stuff? We're feeding the baby, right? The baby, too. And so when the baby is born, there's stuff there, too, potentially, right? And so, I have kids, young kids, you know, so when they're young and they don't have the verbal skills, then we do use other things, play. Meditation. I've done yoga with little kids.
Yeah.
Do a lot of breathing strategies with kids. So, it's never too. Our mental health is from the start. And it goes till we're no longer here. And so, it's never too early to begin simple work. You know,
how do we
manage our emotions? How to deal with our self-esteem? So, all that stuff. Yeah, the sooner we can do some of that, the better.
And I love, we talked about not too late, but I love what you said. It's never too early.
No.
Sometimes we think, they're 3 years old. They don't know. They don't see what's going on.
But they do.
But they are so affected.
They do.
Those foundational years, 0 through, I want to say, I say to 5 years old, mm-hmm. they're so crucial.
They're very, very crucial.
We think they're not paying attention or they're oblivious, but they are taken in everything.
They are.
And in their immediate environment.
They're aware of everything. It amazes me how many clients I've had who are young, and in that time, they don't have the tools to articulate all that's happening around them, but you could feel it. We experience life through all of our senses. Hear, what we see, what we smell, what we taste, what we touch, right? And so life is coming at us with all of that. And so sometimes we don't have the words.
Sure.
But it's still coming. It's still here.
But it's still coming.
It's still here. And so I have kids when they are 10 and they're able to talk and they smell something and they would say, oh, man, that reminds me of the time. This happened, that happened. It's never too early to start. It's never too late to start. It's just about starting when you're noticing the anxiety, the depression, the feeling alone, the unhealthy thoughts, the the negative thoughts, when you're noticing anything that doesn't make you feel at your best, start doing the work to figure out what is that about, right? Not be in denial, because again, I often tell people, when we acknowledge what's going on, then it puts us in a position to do something about it. Yeah. But when we don't, we just kind of put it aside, and that's what a lot of us do.
Most of us do.
We avoid, we pretend.
Avoidance.
We set aside, and then there's just a pile. And so most of the time when I have people come to me, they now have a pile of stuff, right? And yeah, our job is to work through this pile. What I often tell people, most importantly, my job too, is to make sure we don't create another pile.
That's really good.
We don't create more piles, because life is still going on.
Yeah.
Right? And so just because we're working and we're healing, we're doing all this.
Right.
You know, life happens still.
Yeah. Right?
And so as life is happening, my job is to also give people tools to manage life as it's happening with healthier coping mechanisms, healthier ways to deal with it, so we don't create piles. Because that pile gets heavy, and it gets heavy fast.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And so there's things we can do to make sure it doesn't get heavy, make sure that we don't create it to begin with. But that self-awareness is the key. Because what you need isn't what I need.
Right.
Right. But I think also with the world of social media, everything is at your fingertips. And so when we see something that's at our fingertips, and we see this person is doing so well over here, because that's a lot of my...
Right.
My 20-year-old clients, from 20 to 30, that's a lot of what they struggle with. So-and-so is doing so good, but I'm not doing this. And I often have to say, we don't know what so-and-so is going through.
That's right.
What you see there isn't...
It's not what you get.
Maybe even what that is, but that's what they want you to see.
Yeah.
Right? And so we can't be concerned about that.
Yeah.
So that's another part of the work, is really helping people not be sucked into what social media has or what everybody else got going on, but to focus on what you have going on.
Right.
Because we all have our own struggles, and we all have our own ways to deal with it. And we all need different things to live this life.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
I love how you simplify it. It's about living this life. Mm-hmm. Life is going to be lifing, as they say.
All the time.
But when it's lifing, how do you manage that?
Absolutely.
You know, and you've really simplified it. And like you said, it's from the start until we're... Transition out of this earth.
Yeah, absolutely. Another saying that I love to say is, life is like the ocean. The ocean is full of waves. We can sit there and wait for the wave, and the wave, and the wave, because there's constant waves coming, or learn to be the best swimmer we can be.
When
you become the best swimmer, how the wave comes doesn't really matter. No matter how big or small that wave comes, if you know how to swim. But when you're sitting there kind of waiting for it, and you're not perfecting your tools, your skills, then it's almost like,
always falling and drowning. And
you never feel like we're thinking, because we're on the lookout for it, we're prepared. But the preparation comes in building ourselves up.
That's so good.
And working on ourselves. And so I have to tell people, with this life, it's not so much waiting for the next thing to happen.
Next bad thing.
There's always going to be a thing.
Right. Sure.
Bad thing, right? And so it's making sure you're eating. Making sure you're eating healthy. Making sure you're sleeping. Making sure you're getting rest. Making sure you're exercising, making sure if you need to go talk to them, go talk to them, making sure financially you get your stuff right. When we're doing the things we need to be doing to make sure we're good, when that next thing happens, we're in a better position. But when we're exhausted, we're tired, we're not eating, we're hungry, our finances are not, when that next thing happens, we're not, it feels different. Because the next thing is going to happen. That's the given.
It will happen.
And I often tell people, don't worry about that thing. That thing is coming.
Right.
Regardless.
Don't worry about it. It's going to come.
Your job is to make sure you are your best when it does come.
Wow.
And that's what my job is with people, is to make sure you are your best when this happens. Because this is happening.
It's going to happen.
So let's not focus on that.
Wow.
So it's making sure we can be the best that we can be whenever life happens.
And that takes like a lot of weight and anxiety off, because so many times we're waiting for the next bad thing to happen. We're just like, it's going to be a horrible day. It's going to happen. The worst is going to happen. And that could be another thinking trap.
Absolutely.
But you're just constantly thinking the worst. And you're not prepared for the worst.
And learning to step outside of that, because whatever we focus on is what we're going to see. Because that worst Well, probably, right? You stub your toe. You're sitting in traffic. You know, life stuff. Life stuff can become the worst and feel like the worst when that's all you see all the time, because that's where your focus is.
That's also good.
And so I often tell people, let's not just focus here, right? Because we know this bad thing's here, and there's always this.
Sure.
How about we try to see what else is here, right?
Yeah.
And when we can look up and see everything else, we can see, oh, wow, there's all this here, too.
Yeah.
It gives you a break from this. Uh-huh. You know, it gives you time away from this to know this is not just all there is, because people do get trapped into life is horrible, everything's horrible, because that's all they've seen, that's all they've experienced, which again, with what they've experienced makes sense, but I often have to shift, say, is that all there is though? Right. Let's start to see other things. Tell me some good things. Tell me some other things that's happening.
Yeah.
And really broadening their worldview.
Right? That's so good. And shifting paradigms. And that's not easy.
No, it's not.
That's a work. Because like you talked about the piles. Mm-hmm. That's years of built up piles that people are carrying and holding on to that they have to begin to unpack. A lot of it is in the mind. And it's so hard to undo the same thinking pattern that you've been conditioned to
to believe or to have since birth, right?
Yeah.
So there's this thing called the cognitive triad, right? Thoughts, feelings, and with feelings I also put like a physical sensation, then there's actions.
Yeah.
Right? So our thoughts dictate our feelings,
yeah.
which dictates how we feel in our body, which then dictates our actions, and vice versa all around, right?
Right.
And these things begin, again, at birth. At birth, whatever our environment is teaching us is what we start to do, is what we know, right?
Yeah.
The thinking in our environment, the behavior and the feelings, it's all, you know, from very early on. And so, yes, you're right. People start to have ways that they think and see the world and feel very early, and it becomes very difficult to change that. But there's things we can do, and it's about intentional work. And it starts with being aware, becoming aware of your thinking patterns.
Yeah.
Right? So you could become aware of your feeling patterns.
Yeah.
And then you could become aware of your body
actions.
Patterns.
Yeah.
Right? And then you could then be aware of your actions. Absolutely.
Right.
The patterns in your actions. Because once we start seeing the pattern, then people say, oh, okay, I see it. And they can say, oh, I'm about to do this. I've had clients, because once we, you know, there's activities and things for that. Once they see, oop, I see the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's the first thing, is to recognize there is. Oh, I see it. Okay. That's the step. And then now how do we shift it? How do we change it? How do we do something different? But it's a slow process. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Which is why this is work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's work. And that's the word that we typically use. Therapy is work.
It is work.
And I'd love for you to show that T-shirt, because I think that shirt depicts therapy
for
me.
It's me against me. Mental health matters.
Uh-huh.
And yes, the back, me versus me. Yes.
Versus me.
Me versus me, which is, again, you know, it's our own internal work.
Uh-huh.
You know, we struggle with our own self, because, again, our environments and parents may have planted the seed.
Yeah.
But guess what? We continue to water that seed.
That's right.
We water the seed, right?
Yeah.
When someone planted the seed of you're not good enough.
Uh-huh.
Right? Whatever in your environment may have done that, but somehow we continue to say it, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough.
Right.
Right. So it's the own, we struggle within our own selves. And so once we start recognizing what we're telling ourselves, then we can challenge ourselves.
Yeah.
And we have to do the work. And so if no one else is there to do it, I often tell people, what would you tell you? Who do you need right now who's going to pull you out of this?
That's so good.
Right. And so I could be here to do it. I'm going to be here to do it. But when no one else is here, who's that person that you can be for you?
That's so good.
And we have to learn to do that.
Yeah.
Right? And again, it's not always easy, but it can be done.
It can be done.
Absolutely.
This is incredible. Absolutely. I want to go back to this book here, and I'm wondering, I think we've normalized daddies being absent in Black communities, Black households, Black families, but I really would love for you to just dig a little deeper into why having a father or a mother and or mother in the home, or just in, not just necessarily in a home, but in that child's life is important.
Yeah. Because you get to see what that relationship is like.
Yeah.
Right? I think for one, when there's a father there, you get to relate to a man that loves you, right? That cares for you. And so not just having them there, but also them being there in the best way possible. Because I do see when I talk about absent, I'm not just absent, that they're not there all the time. Because I also have clients, their fathers are in and out, in and out, in and out.
That's so harmful.
And that's also, that's just as harmful. They're just, they're absent. They're not there consistently.
Right.
Right. And so that's also the loss of that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that father figure, that mother figure is the person who, as a child, you look up to, mm-hmm. right? And so that person is your protector. That person is your provider. That sure. person is your love, mm-hmm. right? And so those are the meanings when we say daddy and mommy.
Yeah.
Right? And when it's done in the best way, that person is teaching us about love, is teaching us what love is about, is teaching us what safety is about,
yeah.
is teaching us what trust is about, is yeah. teaching us what taking risks are about, because sure. when they're there and we know we're safe, we know we're good, mm-hmm. teaching us about self-esteem, teaching yeah. us about how to relate to other people is teaching mm-hmm. us about everything,
yeah.
you know? And so those parental figures are really key
right.
in teaching us things. And so when that's absent, there's something there that's missing.
Right.
Right. And so I think oftentimes, even when I've had clients, they've had other people fill those roles. Mm-hmm. But the question of why didn't my parent do this? Right. Yeah. Because again, part of what, when we use the word daddy and mommy, it's mm-hmm. this is the person that birthed you. This is
brought you into the world.
Brought you into the world. Right.
Yeah.
This father, you know, was with your mom and brought you here, right?
Yeah.
And so as a child, those are what we see. And so when they're not there, first thing is, what's wrong with me? Why don't mm-hmm. they love me? And so
yep.
part of what happens when there is an absent parent, the child automatically looks inward and feels there's something
blames
wrong with them
themselves.
And blames right. themselves and find faults in themselves. So that's the first thing that tends to happen, because children automatically, when they're being yelled at by the parent or something's mm-hmm. happening, what did I do wrong? It's my fault. When
right.
may or may not be them at all. And in cases of that absent parent, it's definitely not the child,
right?
Right? But that's what the child believes. And when the child believes that from early on, mm-hmm. and again, when that conversation about it's not you, that your father's not here, it's not because of you, when that yeah. conversation isn't talked about, mm-hmm. then that child grows up thinking,
it's my fault,
right? They weren't there for me. They must not love me. I'm not loved.
Not good enough.
I'm not right. good enough, right? Those are the narratives that now starts to form. But when right. somebody was there to kind of create that intervention to say, it's not about you. He has things going on. It's his issue. Right. Even though the child may not necessarily understand that, but when that conversation begins to happen, mm-hmm. then they could better understand that.
Right.
Because one of the things I often have to tell my clients, again, these are adult clients who are struggling with, oh, man, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't me.
Wow.
My father was a crack addict. Just the other day, one of my clients, she's in her 30s, and her father's still on crack. Oh, he's on crack. She
wow.
just realized, oh, he's on crack. He's been a crack addict all my life, right?
Wow.
It wasn't my fault that he wasn't here. It wasn't because of me. It
right.
wasn't because he loved me. He didn't love me, right?
Yeah.
And so one thing I often have to talk about, too, is daddies and mommies were people before they became mommies and daddies. And so
yeah.
if they were people, they were human, they were a child or whatever they were with their mm-hmm. own issues, with their own stuff prior mm-hmm. to become mommy and daddy,
yeah.
if they didn't do their work either,
uh-huh.
that stuff just carries on
yeah.
into parenting.
Right.
Right? Or
yeah.
not parenting. But
right.
that stuff just carries on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so that's a lot of the work and conversations that has to happen for people to really get to a place where, oh, it isn't my fault.
Mm-hmm.
I am enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. There's so much to unpack on this. I'm thinking of a show I recently started watching. I probably won't say the name. It's a Netflix show. Mm-hmm. But it's about a father and a daughter. Mm-hmm. Father was absent for, I think, maybe 20-something years of his daughter's life. But now they're living together. She's an adult. And she has her own son. And, you know, one episode, it's her son's birthday. And so the father, who's the grandpa, puts on this huge party. And she's, like, disturbing and distracting anything the father does for her son. And she's like, I don't want you to do that. No. And she's, you know, just being unreasonable at her son's birthday party. And she finally comes to grips with herself and says, you know what it is? I realized I don't want you doing for my son because you never did for me.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, I'm an adult now. And here I am. These issues I had with you, they haven't gone away.
No, they haven't. They don't.
Yeah.
And they manifest themselves in all kind of ways in relationships, in terms of how we see ourselves.
Yeah.
And also how we see other people and how we relate to ourselves and how we relate to other people.
Right.
So, yeah, that stuff goes really, really deep. And the more we get some insight about it, then we start doing the work.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely.
How do we start doing the work? Good time to pull out that workbook right there.
Yeah, how to stay mentally healthy. Uh-huh. A guided workbook to self-awareness and self-discovery. And incredible. So I think you start doing the work by becoming self-aware and discover who you are.
Yeah.
Not who you were made to be based on everything else, but really taking some time to figure out, who am I? Mm. You know, I have a lot of people who struggle with, I don't know what I like. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know anything. And they're in their 20s. I have a young lady, graduated top of her class, graduated top in college, did everything she was supposed to do, and she did everything well. And the question is, I don't know who I am.
Wow.
Right? And so taking time for that self-discovery so you could really know who you are for you, not for anyone else.
Sure.
You know, because a lot of us do struggle with wanting to please others. And
yeah.
Learn to be accepted, and so there's a lot of those struggles that we have. So when that's the case, we're doing, and we're probably good at what we're doing, but we're not really happy,
right?
And that creates its own set of struggles when we're not happy and content with ourselves. And so, yeah, that self-awareness, figuring out, who am I? And when I tell people this, that includes the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
That includes it all. Who are you? Once you could say, I am this. Okay, now what are we
working with?
Right, because when we don't acknowledge the bad and the ugly, we wear the masks.
That's so good,
right?
That's so good.
So that people can't see it.
Professional mask wearers, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And so it's important that we show up as our true self.
That's so good.
Right, not that perfect self.
Yeah,
and stuff like that. And so I have activities in that talks about that. Wow. So when we need to be our true self, so we could really know who we are, and show up as authentic as we need to be.
Yeah. Right?
And when we could do that, that's the self we could be the best in, right? But when we're showing up as what other people want us to be, sometimes it's gonna take a toll and it's gonna catch up to us.
Absolutely, it will be a burden. I have this thing that I say, but I think I got it from my mentor, Dr. Cindy Trim. And she says, you can't be anybody else. They're already taken.
Yeah.
You gotta be yourself.
Absolutely.
That's it. The only person that can be you is you, and you would be you. Absolutely. Better than anybody can.
Better than anybody can. And it's really helping people believe in that and buy into that. Because, again, when they start to see themselves as something, as someone that may be different than this person, then at that point there's an awkwardness, or there's a lot of shame that people carry, depending on also of their experiences, because our experiences makes us who we are. And then when there's a lot of negative experiences that we've also had, there's shame that's attached to that. And so I don't want to feel shamed. I don't want to be different, you know. But again, part of our journey is to accept all of that, right? And turning that shame into a voice. Right? Because again, break the silence, break the shame, and break the stigma. Because when we're ashamed of something, then we stay silent, and then nothing gets done. Right?
Yeah.
So we have to break all that.
That's so good. Shame equals silence. It's so true. Mm-hmm. But the good thing about all of this is that you the power lies within you. Mm-hmm. You have the power to change your narrative. You have the power to do the work. But it requires intentionality, like you said.
It does.
But there is so much hope.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so much healing.
Absolutely.
Enough for everyone.
yes. And really helping people understand that they do have the power.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, too, when people get to me, they feel as if they're powerless.
Powerless, yeah.
Right? Because their voice is taken away from them.
Yeah.
Their, who they are is taken away. All types of things are taken away from them, and they feel they can't speak up. And so a lot of the work I do with clients is just today, the work, you know, she ghosts people rather than say how she feels.
Just ghost.
Don't say anything. Just ghost. Ignore them altogether, which is what ghosting is. Right?
Avoidance.
Just ignore them and avoid them altogether when it's simply, no, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of our work is, okay, whoever you're avoiding this week, I want you to go ahead and text them right now to say what it is you need to say.
Good.
It's kind of hard.
And so you're gonna be okay. You can do it.
You can do it. Whatever they say, through. It's okay. And then, and every time, oh, it feels like a relief.
Okay.
Now you've answered, you know, it's not something you just now piled up.
Yeah, you haven't dealt with.
Something you just haven't, and this additional thing you haven't dealt with. Here you are, you've dealt with it. Get it off your plate. Yeah, it does feel better when we just get it off our plate. But wow. For the sake of not wanting to hurt someone's feelings, just rather not deal with it. Mm. And so yeah, a lot of things to do, a lot of work to do. So this is the journey that we're all in together.
We're all in it together. And you are, you're incredible in the work that you're doing. You know, I'm really excited to, when I meet other therapists, I don't really practice mm-hmm. as much. Okay. But when I meet other therapists, I'm just excited to be in their company, especially brilliant ones like you.
Thank you so
that's
much.
Doing the real work necessary to help change people's lives.
Thank you.
So people want to reach out. They're interested in your services mm-hmm. Or in being trained or mm-hmm. in clinical supervision. Absolutely. How do they reach you?
Absolutely. So I'm on all social media platforms under Esteem Counseling Services, Esteem, E-S-T-E-E-M, mm-hmm. Counseling, C-O-U-N, S-E-L-I-N-G, Services, S-E-R-V-I-C-E-S. So Esteem Counseling Services, and, you know, that's the way to reach out to me. And my name is Natalie Ellis, and just Google me, too. I'm on Google.
He's on Google, y'all. Google Natalie Ellis. please, if you're looking for a therapist, she takes as young as 3, all the way up to 76. And I'm sure if you're 80s, 90s, she'll take you too. And you know what?
Yeah.
It's never too late, guys. Never too late and never too early to start.
Absolutely. Never too late, never too early.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Natalie, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
It's been such a pleasure. Yes, chatting with you and hearing your story. I had said this as a joke. I said, we got to get your son on if he's willing to get the other side of the story because, you know, I think it's incredible. He's a co-author. You mentioned
a co-author of the books. Where's My Daddy? Because it's actually his story. So he is a co-author of the book. And then he also designed the T-shirt. So he's a fashion designer.
Wow.
In Atlanta. So.
That's incredible.
So he designed the T-shirt, so we try to do a lot of work together.
I love that. That's what it's about. I love it. Healing together, and now you're helping people to heal together.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely.
Incredible. Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you
for your time.
Thank
you for your story. Thank you for what you're doing. You're needed
in
this space.
Thank you.
So continue, please. Champion us. I believe, I have hope. When I see people like you, it lifts my heart up, and I'm like, there's hope, guys. There's credible people like Natalie Ellis.
There's always hope. And I try to make sure when people step into my office, they could feel the hope. You know, like I said, we through our senses. So I have music playing.
Yeah.
I sense smells in there. And I want people to feel safe when they come in and know that there is hope no matter what they're telling me. So oftentimes people are like, this is a lot, huh? I'm like, it's a lot, but we'll get through it.
We're going to get through it.
We'll get through it. And there's always hope. And as long as we're willing to do the work, I think it's a step at a time.
Yeah.
A step at a time, absolutely.
It's one step at a time, guys.
Absolutely.
But you got to start. Start somewhere, okay? Start by reaching out to Natalie. And lastly, how could people purchase one of these books if they're interested, a parent, a therapist, they just want to reach out and
purchase. So all the books are on Amazon. So if you put Where's My Daddy? A Girl's Guide to Grieving an Absent Father, you should find it on Amazon. So all the books are on Amazon. And also, if you go in my Instagram, there's a link, and the link will have the T-shirts, will have the books, will have all the different things on there as well.
Incredible. Guys, you got to get your copy. I know I'm going to get mine after this. So please follow Natalie Ellis on Esteem Consulting Services.
Esteem Counseling Services.
Counseling Services. Esteem Counseling Services on all social media platforms. Guys, we appreciate you so much for tuning in to this segment. This was incredible. I know if you listen to the end, you are feeling inspired and better and feeling hopeful, and you should. Do us a favor and share this message out to your networks, to your friends, your families, because we want to make sure they get the information too. We want to make sure you are healthy and you are well, because you deserve to be. We'll be back soon, guys. Stay tuned. We love you guys.